welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 280 of the podcast. And it is the 30th of July, 2016, as I record this. Can't quite believe we're heading into August. And I actually went for a walk earlier and I saw the beginnings of some blackberries on the on this hedgerows by the river. And that was quite disturbing because blackberries mean autumn. So anyway, there we go. Today I have an interview with Ellen Bard, and it's an important one really, as it's all about self-care as authors and creatives, as well as some stuff on psychology, mindset, being organized and productive. And we also talk about travel. And I really enjoyed my chat with Ellen, and she's also set up a special page for you, a special landing page, if you want to check out some of her resources after the show at ellenbard.com/pen, P-E-N-N. So you can check that out, ellenbard.com/pen. Okay, so in publishing news, nothing, you know, major, just a couple of things I was interested in. There was an article out this week, and I'll link to it in the show notes, titled "Maverick Women Writers Are Upending the Book Industry and Selling Millions in the Process." Now, it is about romance writers, and as ever, always really great to read about some of the romance writers out there having amazing success. But it also has a very interesting graph on the most popular genres in the US, which I found really interesting, and I'll tell you why. So ignoring romance at the very top of the graph, it then goes down through suspense, thrillers, mystery and detective, and then, you know, through science fiction, fantasy, graphic novels, children's, etc. And then near the very bottom is action, adventure and occult and horror and some other genres. Really interesting graph. Again, I'll link to it in the show notes. But what it reminded me that the genres we put our books in, the categories we put our books in, are so important. And the thing is, I write thrillers, I write mystery, detective, but what I write could also be described as action adventure or occult or religious or horror, some of it anyway, you know, mostly thriller. But so it was fascinating to me to think that the percentage of genre sales is so different between these subcategories. So yeah, pay attention to that when you are putting your book into various categories. There was a quote there, "Romance has never got the respect it deserves, either as a business or as a creative pursuit." And I think that's true, but I do think that is changing. I think it really is. And that's awesome. So, authors proving their business savvy and lots of readers loving books. So ignore and remember to ignore the thing about ebook sales declining, because basically all those reports do not include books without ISBNs, and that is a lot of books. Okay, so I do want to also talk about print now. You may know, or you know, I've talked about before, that I make 90% of my book sales income from ebooks, as do most indie authors. I'm not that into print as a reader, let alone a writer. So, you know, I mostly read, consume in digital formats. I do have print books in my home, but I generally prefer to read digitally. And also, it's much easier to make an income with ebooks. Very interesting interview that Nick Stevenson just posted with John Lee Dumas about the Freedom Journal. And I actually have one. I have it right here next to me on my desk, because I saw this and I bought one. It's a hardback. It's the subtitle is "Accomplish Your Goal in 100 Days." And it's a very smart product. It's, you know, it's quite thick, and essentially it's got gold edging. It's very nice. And then it's literally just a workbook with sort of goal setting exercises and thoughts. And it's like a guided diary for achieving goals in 100 days, whatever your goal is. So it's really interesting. But Nick interviewed John because this book is self-published, and it made $450,000 US on the launch. which just makes me laugh because that's ridiculous amount of money to make off a, you know, what this is, which is a hardback journal type book. Now, John runs the Entrepreneur on Fire podcast, and he has a big community and a big audience, but it's still amazing to me that you can do that with a print book. And many people would be very happy with even a tiny percentage of sales like that. Now, I haven't done hardbacks yet, but it's definitely something I've thought about. And I'm kind of waiting for CreateSpace to sort out hardbacks. I know Ingram Spark do them. But anyway, John would have done a short print run for that. But you can check out the really fascinating interview at thecreativepen.com/450k. That's the numbers 450k. So thecreativepen.com/450k. That interview, because it's a very long link otherwise, or again, there'll be links in the show notes. So fascinating stuff in terms of print launch. Okay, in personal news, a little celebration and a big thank you to everyone, because this show now has had over 1 million downloads. I don't look at stats very often. I'm not a data person really, but I just checked it and we're at 1,083,639 downloads, with each show getting around 6,500 listens in the first week, which is very cool. And then the backlist getting more over time as people discover the show. So not quite super A-list numbers, but not bad for our little corner of the internet. So thank you all for being part of the podcast community and also spreading the word about it to your author friends and leaving reviews on iTunes and Stitcher and all the rest. So thank you so much for that. I also watched the new Tony Robbins documentary, or the documentary about Tony Robbins, this week. It's called I Am Not Your Guru. And it made me really think. Well, one, it's a really interesting documentary, sort of behind the scenes of one of his big events. And of course, Tony being an expert in NLP and human sort of body language, and very interesting guy just as a character, and so fascinating to watch from a sort of writing point of view, sort of writing about people. But also it made me really think, because 10 years ago, back in 2006, 2007, when I was super miserable with my life and my job, I read Tony Robbins' books, I listened to his audios. That's how I got into, you know, if people say I want a self-help book, you know, Tony Robbins would often be recommended. I think I read Awaken the Giant Within. Around that time, I read The Secret, you know, and discovered the sort of law of attraction. Now, you know, I'm someone who does believe in positive thinking, but also the often people miss out in the law of attraction, the fact that you have to take action. So I definitely took action, but I did start using affirmations, which is something that many self-help people recommend. So the affirmation I set pretty much 10 years ago was, I am creative, I am an author. And 10 years ago, I was neither of those things. And I used that affirmation daily. I took action, took a lot of action, continue to take action. You know, 10 years later, my life has completely changed. And my reality is entirely different to what it was 10 years ago. And when I was watching the documentary, I was like, do you know what? It's kind of crazy, you know. And he actually does say people overestimate what they can achieve in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years. So I wanted to just remind people of some of these principles. And I think when you discover things like this, and then you put things into action, and then you move on and you kind of forget them. And so I still have affirmations, but I don't take it as seriously as I used to, I think, because I love my life. I'm very, very happy. But I'm also still somebody who is ambitious, and I have a lot I want to do in the world. So I'm I've just picked up Awaken the Giant Within again, and I've picked up a book on NLP for writers, because, you know, the words we use are very powerful, both in our minds and in our writing and in our own life. So and especially with the amount of negative media there is around, I've realized that recently, because it's almost like watching a train wreck, you know, watching UK politics, US politics, bad things happening with terrorism, you know, it's very hard to keep your eyes away from that. But I realized that it's been kind of making me feel quite negative. And the thing is, if you don't actually read the news every day, and we don't have a TV, so we don't watch the news, but, you know, even reading the news just puts all this stuff in your head. So I am going to try and limit a lot of the political and miserable stuff that I've been putting into my head. And I'm starting back on a kind of, you know, focusing on the positive stuff, putting some affirmations out there and, you know, really refocusing on the principles that I put into my life 10 years ago. And then as things have got better and better, I think I've left those behind. Anyway, I hope that helps. So the new Tony Robbins documentary, I Am Not Your Guru, it's on Netflix. So that was really interesting. Okay, so thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. Here's just a few of them. L.E. Thomas Jr. says, great show this week. Listened while hiking in 100 degree heat. Love the analogy between walking 100K and writing. Gina Lamana said, listening while running. My toenails are still recovering from the Boston Marathon. Congratulations on your accomplishment. Thank you, Gina. And, you know, if you're interested in the recovery of my feet, I did lose the toenail on my right foot and my little toe. It fell off this week. And it was I feel actually quite proud of the fact that I managed to lose a toenail through exercise. Because I'm not someone who does massive amounts of exercise. So although I'm trying to change that now, to be sure. Sarah Beth Hunt says, thanks for the latest podcast, out just in time for my morning run. Great to hear everybody running around, hiking and doing exercise while listening to the show. Walter Mason, listening to the show on Newtown Station, having just been to an author talk and sent me a picture from the subway. Thank you, Walter. Vicky Tashman says, I love listening to your podcast. I just finished the book funnel one while walking in my neighbourhood in sunny and hot Los Angeles. My first children's book will be self-published this fall. Brilliant, and sent a lovely picture. Clarissa Bing in Washington, D.C., listening to the podcast on my commute for the last few weeks, inspiring and motivating. Eliza Peak says, love the episode with Kate Kordsmeyer, fellow Atlantan, great freelance ideas. It's always nice to hear when people are listening to more of the backlist. And Roma Brooks says, love the podcast on Kobo with Mark Lefebvre, which was very helpful. Edward Giordano, Giordano, I'm going to go with that. Because of you, whenever I hear the word Renaissance, I can only hear it in your voice in my head. And this made me laugh because, I mean, I think all British people say Renaissance like that, the Italian Renaissance. But I actually saw a clip of Michelle Obama on the, you know, that carpool karaoke with James Corden, I want to say. Don't really know, but anyway. And they were talking about her code word as you know, the first lady. And apparently it's Renaissance. I think that's how Americans say it, Renaissance. So when I got your tweet, Edward, I was like, that's really funny because I didn't even know Americans pronounce it differently. And finally, Nicola Monaghan says, I'm telling every writer I know about your latest book, which I think might have saved my writing life, about the successful author mindset. Thank you so much, Nicola. And I've been so pleased at how well the author mindset book has been received, because it was tough to put it out there because it contains the diary excerpts of some of my darkest moments as an author, which of course I never share on the podcast because I'm so upbeat and happy. But in that book, there is, you know, some of my own fears and self-doubt. So I'm so glad it's helpful. So thanks as ever for your emails and comments and tweets about listening to the show. I really love getting them. So please keep sending them. I'm at The Creative Pen on Twitter, or joanna@thecreativepen.com by email. And I love the interaction we have on the show and really appreciate hearing from you all and seeing awesome pictures. Okay, so today's episode is actually sponsored by my own self-publishing success course, because I don't tell people enough about my own courses these days. So I thought that today I would tell you a little bit about it. So if you are confused or overwhelmed by all the options for self-publishing, or if you're frustrated that you're not selling any books or enough books, or wondering why self-publishing isn't working for you, then this course might be right for you. It's aimed at people who are either are self-publishing for the first time or those who are not having the success they want. And it will save you time, frustration, and money along the way because I share everything I've learned in self-publishing 20 books now. And of course, it's also for traditionally published authors who might be going into self-publishing for the first time. So the course covers self-publishing ebooks, print books, and audiobooks, plus marketing, fiction, and nonfiction, as well as ideas on how to make money from books and deciding on your own definition of success. It's video, audio, and slides, as well as bonus material. So if you want self-publishing success, you can check it out. And there is 30-day money-back guarantee and all that type of thing. And you can see all the details, including a video where I take you behind the scenes of the course at thecreativepen.com/selfpub, S-E-L-F-P-U-B. So thecreativepen.com/selfpub. And that will tell you all about the self-publishing success course. And if you are more advanced and looking to make a full-time living with your writing, I also have the Creative Freedom course, which I also have a private community for those ambitious business-minded indie authors, and that's at creativefreedomcourse.com. Okay, so these types of things are the way I pay for the hosting and transcription for the podcast, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. As ever, I'm so appreciative of those of you who enjoy the show enough to actually support it financially. Thanks especially to new patrons, Lisa Van Pelt, Jennifer Harris, and Joel Hagerman. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate the Patreon support. And if you're interested in supporting the show on Patreon, even just $2 a month or whatever you like, you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, and you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, so thank you everyone, and let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Ellen Bard. Hi Ellen.
Hi, Joanna. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Ellen is a work psychologist, a business consultant, paranormal romance author, travel writer, and digital nomad, which is very exciting. Now, Ellen, you seem to have all these things going on. Tell us just a bit more about your life and how it all works together and where are you in the world?
So right now I'm talking to you from Chiang Mai, Thailand. And yeah, it's a bit of an unusual lifestyle, I think. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I was in the UK, much like you were. I did my 60-hour weeks. It was soul-sucking. I didn't have very much of a life. And for various reasons, I decided to take a sabbatical, take a break, went traveling for a few months, did the artist's way, and basically changed my life. I came out to Thailand and I met all these interesting people, digital nomads, as you say, who seemed to have a better lifestyle than I had. So between the artist's way and this concept of a digital nomad, I refocused on what was important to me and what my values were. I discovered this passion for writing that I didn't even know that I had. And then I started to get into all these things. So I started a travel blog first and then a personal development blog. I'm a chartered psychologist, so that kind of helps with the personal development stuff. And then I started writing fiction, paranormal romance, all of these things. And I also continue as a freelance consultant. Last year, I did 112 flights, and I went to countries from China to Saudi Arabia. So it's a bit of a juggle, but basically, I get to go to a ton of cool places and have the freedom to write, which is really more than most of us can ask for.
Wow, it's amazing. And, you know, I talk a lot about traveling on my show, and it's always a challenge for me to talk to someone like you, because half the time I think that's what I want to do. And then I, after examining my own creative process, I really need to live that incredibly boring life in order to get my writing done, and then go away and then travel and then kind of come back. So, you know, how do you manage that creative process when your life itself is so in flux, I guess?
Yeah, that is a great question, and one I ask myself every day. I use David Allen's Getting Things Done methodology. I have many lists. I have an accountability group who I check in with each week. That gives me goals for the week. Then ideally, each night I set my goals for the day. Basically, I'm very structured in a world of constant change. And it means being a lot more flexible and resilient than I think I am as a natural personality trait. I am highly structured. But what I've learned is to be much more comfortable with going with the flow. And if, like this week, a job's come up for me that I can do here, consulting job, it means some time out of the week when I'd already planned the week out. And I'm kind of relaxed about that, sort of. But structure, basically. Flexibility and change.
Yeah, which is fascinating. Oh, then I want to ask about your fiction. Does that, you know, pour into your fiction? Are you a highly structured outliner? And how does that work with the artist's way? Because I think of the artist's way as, you know, the morning pages, which is basically just blur on the page, just write just continuously without thinking too much, which doesn't, again, fit with that structure. So how do you do your fiction with that type of approach?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I do morning pages every day. I would say I probably do 29 days out of 30, and I've done that for 3-4 years. And actually, that really helps with the structure, because what it means is all the like messiness that's in my head, I kind of get out. I go through morning pages, my old morning pages, once every 3 months. And I just check in to make sure there's nothing that I've missed, because I'm only retentive and I don't want to miss anything. And then once that's kind of out of the way, then I try and be very structured in my day. So that might be using Pomodoro technique. I usually go to cafes. What I've realized is that if I go to cafes, the same kinds of cafes every day, so there's maybe three that I rotate between in Chiang Mai, where I am now, that gives me some structure. If I go about the same time, that gives me some structure. In the morning, I have a morning routine, which involves a tenuous meditation of about 5 minutes. I try always morning pages. That's like really grounding for me, and some other bits and pieces. And actually doing that morning routine, and I guess the nightly routine of setting out my goals for the next day, that really helps as well. So the more, the more structured I can be around that flexibility, the better. With the fiction, there's some challenge there because I'm juggling so many projects. So the personal development blog, which is nonfiction, and hopefully there'll be a nonfiction book at some point around that, because of all the plans. That it involves quite a lot of work. As you know, you've got a blog, it's a whole whole ton of work. I already have a couple of products up there. I'm developing another. I tend to set myself word counts. So it's about giving myself goals. If I say to myself, so when I wrote the first book, the very first draft, which is a very shitty first draft. I am, as they say, that's a quote.
That is a quote.
I set myself a target of 1,000 words a day, every weekday for however many months I wanted to do the manuscript. And actually having that structure got me there. Little and often was enough to get me there. And I could do that around other things. And the same with the second book. So at the editing stage of that, again, having that structure has helped. I find editing harder. I don't know about you, just in terms of it's harder to say to myself, or how many words have you done, because when is editing really done? And if I take away words, does that count? If I add words, does that count? Like I find it hard. That's more blurry for me in terms of setting clear goals. But again, I tend to do Pomodoros around that and say, okay, I'm going to do X Pomodoros in a day. And then that works. But it is a constant, and I'm sure it's the same for most people, especially people who are doing jobs around their writing. It's a constant juggle of, okay, I've got these different priorities. How do I make sure that I, you know, keep fiction high on that priority list, because I love it?
Yeah. And also, especially at the beginning, like you say, you know, it doesn't make you any money. for quite a long time. I mean, fiction in particular is one of those things that just doesn't earn its time for quite a long time. Whereas, you know, if you blog or do a non-fiction book, you're far more likely to earn that money back in terms of your time. But I want to ask you, so just so people know, just explain what Pomodoro is in case people don't know.
Sure. So Pomodoro technique is a technique of chunking your time up, essentially. So the kind of typical Pomodoro is 25 minutes. You set a timer for 25 minutes, very straightforward. You only do that task for those 25 minutes. So for most people, and for me for sure, turn off your internet, turn off your phone. Don't have any of these bleeps and distractions around you. Do the thing for 25 minutes and then give yourself a 5-minute break. And depending on the method, you do several Pomodoros and then you have a longer break. So it's a way of really focused attention for short periods of time, which is more productive than just kind of, oh, I'll have a break at some point.
Then I also just wanted to ask about the morning pages again. As a psychologist, if you step outside of your own kind of practice, what are the benefits of morning pages and kind of brain dumping?
I think there's a few different things for morning pages, and I think you can use it in different ways as well, and I think that's important. So one thing, for example, is I do my morning pages on the computer. So I have some chronic pain issues, and free writing for me is not very fun.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy it. It hurts. So I would much rather type. And actually, I find that the words actually flow onto the page much more easily. And Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, I feel like she wanted people to free write because it was 20 years ago and we didn't have
more than that, I think. So, now.
Yeah, a long time. Olden days.
Yeah.
And so before people like you and I were so fluid with our computers that we just don't think about typing. So I think you can be flexible about morning pages. This is whatever I have. So I type mine out. I think you can do several things. So first thing is literally just write whatever's in your head. And I think that can be really useful for just like cleaning it out. So imagine you're sweeping a house. That's what I kind of think of. Get rid of whatever, you know, stuff is mumbling along in your head, whatever you're thinking about, just get out on the page, clean it out. And then if you want to later, you can go back and see, well, was there anything useful in that? But journaling as a practice, and I think you can use morning pages as a way of journaling as well, can be super helpful for people who are trying to process something difficult. So I think the research suggests something like 3 to 5 sessions of maybe 15 to 20 minutes each on one particular issue. And that's enough to, I guess, process it and decharge it for people. So take out some of the kind of heightened emotions around it. And that's an incredibly powerful practice. But one of the things that research says is don't do it to death. So that's enough then. So once you've done it for those sessions, let it go and move on. And sometimes when I go back in my morning pages over a 3-month block, I see something that's come up a lot more than those times. And that's for me as a sign that that's something I need to address in a different way. So if something is a longer term challenge, you know, probably not a huge deal, but nonetheless, it's coming up, then it's something that I need to look at. And is obviously something that's bothering me or just something I need to resolve.
That's a great point, because in reviewing my own journals from like the last 25 years or something, you know, for the book I wrote on mindset, which you very kindly beta read for me, you know, looking at the things that come up over and over again for writers, things like self-doubt and fear of failure, like these are things that may never ever go away for anyone. And I kind of compare that to when I got divorced in my late 20s, and I had about 3 whole journals full of pain, and then it disappeared. Like, and I read those and I can't even recognize that person anymore. Yeah. So it is a very healing practice in that way. Now I want to come back to, you mentioned chronic pain and you have an emphasis on self-care on your website. So tell us about that. Where does all that come from? And if you can share anything that might help the listeners.
Definitely. So self-care, let's define self-care first of all, because it's one of these slightly new age flaky terms. I'm not any of those things. I'm very grounded. But I think it's a really useful term. And all self-care is looking after yourself, usually around physical, emotional, mental aspects of the self, and having that kind of self-kindness or self-compassion around those areas. So that's what self-care is. Now, for me, I started with a very practical focus on self-care because maybe 14 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that, I had a car accident. I was on my way to an early consulting job, my first training course in Manchester. It was snowing, and a lorry went into my car, basically. And that car accident over time left me with a chronic pain issue, which is essentially pain you can't really get rid of, which is obviously very tedious. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is an immune system disorder, which issues with your immune system, and it's also not much fun. And so so those two things gave me a very solid realization, wake-up call, I guess, that I couldn't really go on as I was. So I was working a 60-hour week, working in a high octane business in London, and I loved my job. It wasn't a bad job. It was good in many ways, but I was basically being ground down from my own challenges as well as the role itself. And so, whilst working on those conditions, and both of those are chronic conditions, which basically means they don't really go away. You have to just deal with them. I started to really look into this concept of self-care and look at, well, how do I need to take care of myself better? And that then led to, in part, taking the sabbatical, going to Thailand, and all of these other things. And then when I started realizing how much I enjoyed writing, when I discovered blogging, all of these different aspects, I thought, huh, okay, there's something there for me around sharing some of that with other people, because I also have a background in psychology, and so I'm able to kind of ground my personal experience and the experiences of the people that I work with in that evidence base, which I think is really important, particularly in self-help, self-development, where there's lots of different stuff out there, and some of it is more helpful than others.
Yeah, no, it's awful story. And, you know, and yet it seems quite a common story with writers, like the number of people who email me with chronic pain, or who, something or a big health issue has happened, which has then changed their life in some way. So how do you think writing helps people with chronic pain? Like, is there something there that is healing, or is it just the best way of making a living if you have that type of condition?
Not sure writing is ever the best way to make a living from a financial perspective, but from an internal perspective, I think, yeah. So I think there's a few different things there. So one is, I think that often people have these health issues, whatever they are, and it changes something inside of them, and it gives them a different perspective, not much like I guess it did for me. And you think, wait a minute, if I'm going to be in this world, and I've had this mortality wake up, even if it's not that extreme, what do I actually want to be doing with my time? And writing is one of the things that many people love and are passionate about and want to do. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that writing is a profession that you can do on your own time. You don't have a manager in an office sitting looking at you, tapping their watch, saying, well, you have to stay to 5:01, otherwise you're out. So you have a lot more flexibility. If you want to write in the middle of the night, you can. If you want to write in an hour's block and then have a sleep, you can. So for many people with chronic health conditions, that is really freeing for them to be able to work to their own schedule. And then the third piece is probably what you say around just this idea of working through some of our issues in fiction. So I know you've said of who I am, of challenges that I've gone through that I then force my poor characters to go through in different ways, or even in darker ways, in more dramatic ways. And so it can be a way of processing some of the things that we've gone through in a more healthy way. And then we can share those with other people and give them that experience and that freedom.
Yeah, and I totally agree with all of that. I think it's just amazingly useful. And you also mentioned compassion earlier, which was really interesting. And often, especially in the indie community, there's this real focus on, like, you must get this number of words done. You even mentioned it earlier, like, it's hard to measure if you've got your words done. And I wonder if compassion for ourselves as writers is lacking at the moment in this kind of do X thousand words a day and get the books out, that type of thing. So what are some practical ways that indie authors in particular can show themselves some compassion and self-care?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. I think that we can be very tough on ourselves as indies, and you only have to look at the kind of popular books around, write 5,000 words, and which, I own all those books and I love them because I love productivity stuff. But sometimes I do step back and think, whoa, just, relax, it's all good.
Yeah.
For writers in particular, I think there's a few different aspects where we can definitely be kinder to ourselves. The first one, and the most obvious one in many ways, is the physical. So often as writers, we see ourselves as a brain,
yes.
Maybe a brain with a pair of hands if we're on a good day. But rarely do we remember that actually that brain comes in a body, and there's a whole load of other stuff around the brain that needs looking after. And so the basic stuff around getting enough sleep, eating the right foods, not over caffeinating or over sugaring in your day when you've got the cookies or the biscuits down there in the kitchen
my coffee,
next door.
Yeah.
And I love coffee, so I'm not criticizing any of these. It's more just keeping an eye on them and balancing them out. So caffeine alone isn't going to get any of us to write more words. It should be an enjoyable thing that we enjoy and we love drinking, rather than something that is a crutch to make sure we hit that word count. So looking after the physical is most definitely the first thing. Whether that's joining Dave from the self-publishing podcast's Fitbit community, which I have done, was a bit better. They did more steps than me the other day after all his discussion about how few steps he does. So the physical is the first thing, but for me it's the emotional piece for writers that is more pervasive and probably more of an issue that we don't even see. So for example, this idea of the self-critic. So all of us have in our head a kind of constant in the background narrative that goes on. For indies, it might say, you don't do enough, you haven't done enough words, your work is rubbish, you need to do more. Why didn't you do your marketing today? You should have been doing your Twitter and doing your words and doing this and doing that, etc., etc. Your plot is terrible. No one's going to read this rubbish. So I imagine some of us can resonate with that, but recognizing that self-critic is not the reality. That's just a voice in your head. It doesn't mean anything. It comes from, your environment, all the influences around you. There's no practical tip that I can give to people is to try and reframe that voice. So first of all, notice the voice, and whether that means, jotting down when you hear something that voice says, or just kind of keeping an eye on it and seeing what the themes are, just recognize that voice exists. Then try and reframe that voice. And the best way for most of us to do it is to imagine that instead of a critic, it's our best friend, because all of us talk to our best friend in a much nicer way than we talk to ourselves, without question. So trying to reframe that voice to say, okay, wait a minute, I've written 2,500 words, I'm tired, I need a break. What would my best friend say to me right now? Would she say, well, those 2,000 words were rubbish, you need to do them again and do an extra? Probably she wouldn't say that. So just trying to reframe that critic as a best friend is a really great tip. I think taking breaks is also really important. So one of the things that The Artist Way talks about, I think is very beautiful, is this idea of filling the creative well. She uses artist dates. You can do that in any way, whether that's reading a book, whether that's going on a walk, whether that's taking photos. We all have different ways of filling the creative well. But I think it's critical for indies. If we don't have something inside us to draw upon, then our writing becomes much, much harder. because, you know, the well's dry.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And so many people, like one of the blocks I think people have is that they haven't filled their well enough. So of course, there's nothing to come out. So you're blocked, like in that way, which is really interesting. Now, I wouldn't just come circle back to what you said about morning pages. You said every couple of months, you go back and you look through them in some way. And, you know, I always think like every time I finish a notebook, like I'm almost, here's my latest moleskin. I love moleskin.
Okay, nice.
I'm almost finished this one. I've only got a couple of pages. And I kind of feel like, yeah, I should go back through it and have a look. And then I never do, you know, and years later I go through and go, oh my goodness, I had that idea back then. That's kind of crazy. So why do you do that process of reviewing, and how, and like you just talked about critical voice, how do you stop yourself judging yourself, and how do you find the gold in those pages?
It's a challenge. I won't lie to you. So I try and be disciplined and only do it every 3 months. So I do my morning pages in Word. It's pretty much the only thing I use Word for. Scrivener is what I use for everything else. And so 100,000 words, which is about 3 months, in a Word document is unwieldy. So that's when I stop the Word document and start another one. So it gives me a nice time blocker. I try and read through and not read it too deeply. So I try and almost skim through. So that's one of the things I do. And I try and set myself a time limit to say, okay, I'm not going to spend the whole day, you know, wailing and weeping over, you know, how my life is. I'm going to go through and I'm going to pick out. So I look for, is there any actions that I told myself I should take and I haven't for some reason? Are there any ideas that I didn't then capture somewhere else? Because that normally I'm pretty good at moving stuff into my Scrivener to-do list. I have a whole Scrivener file of to-do lists. And then also this themes idea. So as I read through the days, you know, is there something that comes up again and again and again? And I make notes of that. Usually I'm a big index card person, because mostly I work on the computer, and so I don't have a lot of paper, just because I travel, I don't own very much stuff, and although I love notebooks, love them, they're not practical.
You have to keep them in boxes.
exactly. So I tend to use index cards for my kind of day-to-day, and then I transfer them into Scrivener. So pulling out the themes is the other practice that I do. And I try and be kind to myself and not spend time beating myself up about, you know, stuff that essentially is in the past. And I think what you said earlier, this idea of looking back at something and realizing that something you were super stressed about, super worried about, it just is in the past, and it doesn't have that emotional charge anymore. I think that's really powerful and a lesson for me every time to say, okay, so whatever I'm stressing about today probably isn't going to be as charged in 6 months' time.
No, it's a really good point. So, I mean, I think we should have an entirely different discussion on productivity because we could obviously go into that in massive detail. But one of the things I am very interested in how you do this, so much of your life is digital. And one thing, I still get emails from people who say they've lost work because they haven't backed it up. What is your backup setup in terms of how do you make sure you don't lose all this stuff, all your pictures, all your everything?
Okay, so more than one redundant system, basically. So I have a Mac. I use the Mac's own system, whatever that is called.
Time Machine,
yep. So I have a physical hard drive that, not brilliantly, maybe every week I back up to. I also have CrashPlan, which is like a digital backup, which backs everything up to the cloud. So in theory, and I've had my IT friend check this many times, actually, everything is backed up when I'm online, and I'm not online all the time because of the lifestyle, but most of the time I'm online at least once or twice a day. And if this fact wasn't enough, I also have Dropbox and my Scrivener files, so basically my books, my works in progress, they, all of those backups are on Dropbox. So I work on them on the computer, but the backup is on Dropbox. So that gives me three systems, which hopefully is enough, because in my life I have lost entire computers, and once that happens once, oh, and And I use Google Drive for photos. So my photos, I put all on Google Drive as well. And I only keep, well, I say only, there's probably 4,000 photos on this computer. But, you know, I live the kind of lifestyle where I take a lot of photos. So, yeah.
I think that's really good because this was something I was reviewing myself the other day, because I have now a ton of external hard drives, and I have Amazon S3, which I back stuff up to, and I have the iCloud, and I have Time Machine, and I email myself every day my work in progress. So that's on Gmail.
Oh,
yeah, I export from Scrivener every day and email myself that Word file. So I've always got that. I know that's there with a date on.
Oh, no, that's going to be added to my list now.
Well, you kind of think, because if that Scrivener file gets corrupted somehow, then you, at least you have it on a Word document. So, but it's funny you mentioned Crash Plan, because I was actually looking at it yesterday going, I think I could use another redundant system just in case. Because this is the thing, like, you know, often we forget what we've done as well, you know, like so, you know, my husband will say, when you made that video, where's the original of that video? And I'm like, I don't know where that is anymore. Yeah. But it's so important, isn't it? Not just with your lifestyle, but in general, the way we work.
Definitely. And I think that's a really good point. Digital file management is critical. So if you're a writer and you've got like your research files, your book covers, your random marketing stuff, your Goodreads campaign, your tweets. I mean, it amazes me how many files I generate for a book, essentially. Mm. All of those things you should keep in a structured way. And I'm trying to keep the same structure for all of my books or essentially book files. So everything is in the same format, no matter what book I'm working on. And that means that if I go to, you know, the first book or a nonfiction book or whatever it is, I can kind of, I know where things should be. And, you know, obviously not perfect, but at least it gives me an idea of being in the right place. Whereas when you have one of those screens which is just full of stuff and everything's higgledy-piggledy, you're going to waste time searching for stuff, which is a frustrating thing to do, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, and we've gone from, you know, doing morning pages to digital file management, but it's amazing how important it is, because and I would just, if people listening are going, oh my goodness, that's crazy, I only think I started to do it with my books probably on like book three, and I look back at my first novel and my first nonfiction, I'm like, I don't know how I managed that. Everything's just like, there's no subfolders, and now I'm like you, I try and make sure it's all really organized, and that actually helps you, because it's a lot of work organizing a whole book or organizing any project. But I did want to come back on the digital nomad thing. You know, you've mentioned that you don't have much stuff, that you live this digital life, and I wondered, is there a particular personality who can cope with this lifestyle?
Yes, I in my personal and professional opinion, there is. In order to be a digital nomad, which is just the kind of modern way of saying someone who, you know, works online, who travels, those would be the two key things. So someone who can take their work with them. I think that you need to be very independent, very autonomous. So one of the key things, and this is exactly the same for writers, and I think most writers could be digital nomads if they wanted to. You know, they have the work, the type of work that would speak to it. You need to be able to work without someone over you telling you what to do. Because if you are not able to do that, you just won't get anything done. And I've seen quite a few people come out to Chiang Mai or the other places that I've been, and they just, you know, they've got caught up in the party lifestyle or whatever. And they haven't been able to generate the hard work that they do. Now, on the flip side, there are some people who come and burn out because all they do is work. They forget that they're in, you know, Thailand or Bali or Berlin, wherever the kind of hub is that they're at, and they don't take advantage of being there, and they just work all the time. So you can burn out that way too. The other critical thing is resilience. So again, I think this is an important skill for all of us, but particularly if you are someone who is spending most of your time in a culture that isn't your own. So if I think about Thailand, which I love, and I'm mostly based in Thailand these days, although I leave the country once or want to go to other places. Thailand can be very confusing as a Westerner. You know, many of the cultures are different. Many of the norms are different. You get it wrong. And you need to be both respectful of other cultures, but also resilient to make mistakes. So, you know, if you're someone who is a perfectionist, who has this strong fear of failure, and that seeps over into your personal life, you're going to feel stressed all the time, because it is impossible to know what's going on, you know, many times. Just something, as give you a really small example. In Thailand, the food here comes when it's ready. So you don't same meal at the same time. One person will get their food, and then, you know, it could be 10 minutes later someone else will get their food. And you often see Westerners come here and they get so stressed at this particular, I don't know why it is, this particular thing, maybe it's food, and they just can't deal with it at all. Whereas in fact, when you realize that a Thai kitchen is often one person with a gas burner, I mean, it's not even plugged into the mains, they usually have a kind of bottle burner, they are cooking literally one meal at a time, and it's all fresh and it's amazing, but they can't do it in the same way that we're used to. And that kind of really small thing really trips people up. And if you imagine a life full of tiny stresses, that overall becomes incredibly stressful, and people just can't really manage. So autonomy and resilience. I think hard work is obviously important. You know, if you're not prepared to put in the work, then you're not going to get very far. Yeah, those would be the kind of key things.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, those little things. That is why I feel I have to travel, because, you know, I feel like I have to get out of my comfort zone. Like, for me, it's important that I don't know how to ask to go to the toilet, for example. You know, that's like a real basic human thing. And if you're in a culture where, you know, it, that even just a basic thing like that, or ordering food, pushes you out of your comfort zone, that's a good thing. And that's actually what we should be doing as writers, is pushing ourselves out of the comfort zone and thinking about other worldviews and all that type of thing. I mean, that's why I travel, but I travel in a different way to you. I struggle to work when I travel. I take a lot of notes and I take pictures, but then I bring it back and use it from, you know, from where I am, although I've moved countries a lot. But, you know, I think I romanticize your life.
But I would say that's partly because you know that your travel is time bound. Whereas for me, travel is kind of what I'm doing now. Like, that's how I live my life. And I know that if I don't manage to make that life work, I can't do my job. The thing that I struggle with the most is coming back to the UK. So whenever I come home to the UK, I just find it hard to tell people that I'm not on holiday, first of all. So everyone either says, oh, you're on holiday when you're in Thailand or wherever, or you're on holiday in the UK, or both somehow. Whereas actually, I work all the time. Like, I'm pretty flexible with how I work, but I have to work. I mean, it's not really a choice. And when I come back to the UK, there are a whole load of other people's needs, I guess, that I'm constantly trying to meet. And that's where the kind of people pleaser in me comes a cropper sometimes, because I struggle to manage my needs and other people's needs. So yeah, there's something around that for me personally is still a development area.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I could talk to you for ages. We might have to have a return match at some point. Tell everybody about your various websites and what they can find there, because you've got some cool ones.
Sure. So probably the thing that people will benefit most from is ellenbard.com, which is my name. That's the personal development website, which really focuses on that intersection between self-care and productivity. So basically, how can you get stuff done and not kill yourself in the process?
That's nice kind tagline. Of where,
well, it, yeah, it's kind of evolved. It's not the real tag right now, but that is essentially what it does. Then my fiction is at ellenbardauthor.com. And then I also have a travel blog, should people be interested in that side, which is called wherever the wind takes me.com. So many places. I have many, many, many places around the world.
And I like, I've been reading both of your blogs, and what I like about them is there is a different voice there for both of those sites. So I quite like, I you know, I enjoy your travel one from that perspective. And then there's your very authoritative kind of psychologist voice in the other one.
My official voice.
Yeah, your official voice, which is great. So I hope people have heard both on this discussion. So thanks so much for your time, Ellen. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.